You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're going to be talking about, sort of, as I mentioned before the break, sort of science fiction, strange things in the universe. Now, we talked about dark energy. It isn't the only thing strange in the universe. Did you know that time travel has not been ruled out? It's a possibility. According to guys like Albert Einstein, it's not impossible to travel forward and backward in time, or even to cross great distances faster than the speed of light if you can somehow twist the geometry of the universe. Take some tricky physics to do this. Are the warp drives and wormholes of science fiction grounded in scientific fact? Well, it turns out they are. And so for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk with the two authors about quirks in the quanta and in gravity that might allow for time travel. Our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, if you want to talk about time travel. Please, if you have experienced time travel, that's not for this show. So that's a different program. 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guest, J. Richard Gott, professor of astrophysics at Princeton University and author of Time Travel in Einstein's Universe, The Physical Possibilities of Travel Through Time. He joins us from Princeton. Welcome to the program.
How do you do?
You're welcome. William Altshuler is a professor of science at California Institute of Arts and author of The Science of UFOs, What If They Are Real? And he joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
William Altshuler, how hard is it? How hard is it to travel between stars?
It's really difficult because of the extraordinary distances. If you pay attention to relativity and assume that you'll never travel faster than the speed of light, every place you'd like to go is a long way off. The nearest star is 4.25 years away at light travel speeds, and the fastest thing we've ever made, the Voyager probes, which are well on their way out of the solar system at better than 35,000 miles an hour, if they were aimed on target to the nearest star, would take about 85,000 years to arrive. The distance is really extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Professor Gott, in your book Time Travel in Einstein's Universe, The Physical Possibilities of Travel Through Time, might it really be possible to employ Einstein's theories to travel through time?
Yes, we talked about time travel to the future. Einstein's theory of special relativity, which he developed in 1905, in which we get the famous equation E equals mc squared. In that theory, he showed that moving clocks tick slowly. And so we've measured this effect. We know this is true because we've put atomic clocks on jet airplanes going around the world to the east, where their velocity adds to the velocity of the Earth, and they come back about 59 billionths of a second slow relative to ones that stayed at home. So we know that this effect works, and as you go faster, you get a larger effect. So if you wanted to visit the Earth 1,000 years from now, if you got on a rocket ship and went at 99.995% the speed of light out to a star 500 light years away and came back at the same speed, you would only age 10 years, but the Earth would be 1,000 years older when you got back. Now, we're not sending rockets at nearly the speed of light, but there's an astronaut, Sergei Avdeyev, who was up 748 days on the Mir space station, traveling 17,000 miles per hour. And because of this slowing of his clocks, he's a 50th of a second younger than he would have been if he'd stayed home. And when he got back, he found the Earth to be a 50th of a second into the future of where he expected it to be. So this is a man who's time traveled toward the future 1/50th of a second.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Professor Altshuler, you talk about, let's assume that maybe UFOs are real, okay? And that, mm-hmm. of course, the big question everybody would say is not only where are they, you know, that sort of stuff, but how could they get around the universe so quickly? And you sort of answer that by playing tricks with the geometry of the universe. Tell us about how they might do that.
Well, there's a series of different kinds of ideas about what they might do. Some of them assume that you won't travel faster than light, and the others, which assume that you will, all have to do, again, with Einstein's theory of relativity in one form or another. And one of these is what's been conventionally called in science fiction a space warp. In other words, some mechanism for making space bend around a traveling object in the same way that it bends around any natural object. The natural effect of matter is to bend space. And if you could figure out a way to do this artificially and perhaps without any actual matter being present, so to speak, you might have a portable space warp, which, if you made it unsymmetrical so that it compressed space in the direction you were trying to go and expanded it in the opposite direction, you'd travel along as if you were almost on a wave and might be able to go at some multiple of the speed of light. And if you were inside this warp, then time probably would not seem to be any different. I mean, in fact, under the special theory of relativity, you, the traveler, don't really notice anything odd whatsoever. You think travel is normal. Mm-hmm. Your aging process is normal, and it's only when you compare yourself to the outside universe that things seem rather strange. And if you were inside one of these bubbles, you might in fact be cut off from all outside view. Light which tried to enter would presumably be very shifted in wavelength. Your previous discussion about dark energy had something to do with this also. Your view of the universe from the spaceship would be very greatly altered. Mm-hmm. That's one way.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Gott, you agree?
Yes. Yes, the Star Trek people discussed a warp drive, warping of space. This is in Einstein's theory of general relativity, which is his theory of gravity as a curvature in space-time. And a wormhole is another method, a tunnel that you could take a shortcut to get to Alpha Centauri. There'd be a tunnel opening mouth at one end. You'd jump in, and maybe you'd only go 10 feet, and you'd pop out the other end of the tunnel, and you'd find yourself at a far distant place in space, such as Alpha Centauri. And Kip Thorne and his associates showed how you could manipulate the wormhole mouths to actually go back in time.
So the wormhole is basically a warp. You've warped space so that you make like a loop of carpet. Let me see if I can say it that way. And so you could go in the bottom of the carpet where the loop starts and come out the other side where the loop ends.
Yeah.
And sort of tunnel your way through. But everybody else would have to go around that big piece of carpet, so it would be slower for them. And
yes,
you'd be sort of going back in time.
It's a shortcut.
It's a shortcut.
There was a saying that, there was a young lady named Bright. She traveled far faster than light. She left one day in a relative way and returned the previous night. So in special relativity, if you could go faster than the speed of light, you could theoretically go back in time. The trouble was that Einstein said you couldn't go build a rocket ship to go faster than the speed of light. But in general relativity, there are solutions to Einstein's equations which allow shortcuts, allow you to beat a light beam by taking a shortcut, and this would allow you to go back in time. These are solutions that are curved, they're twisted. It's the same way that Magellan's crew was able to go west, west, west around the Earth and come back to Europe. The time traveler goes forward, forward, forward in time, but finds himself returning to an event in his own past.
But he can't go backwards further back than when he started.
Well, you can't go back further than when the time machine was invented.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the wormhole solutions are the solution that I found with using cosmic strings to take shortcuts and go back in time. The time travel starts at a certain epoch, when you've twisted space sufficiently to allow a time loop to occur. So in layman's terms, if you twist space up in the year 3000 to build a time machine of this sort, you may be able to use it to go from 3002 back to 3001, but you can't come back to 2003 because that's before the twisting in space-time occurred.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, it wasn't a wormhole that the device Carl Sagan used in his 1985 novel Contact?
Yes, this is an interesting interaction between science fiction and science. He wanted to use a wormhole to make a quick trip to the star Vega, and he called up his friend Kip Thorne and said, "I'd like to get the science right, and so what about wormholes?" And Kip Thorne and his students investigated this, and they found out that what was required to prop a wormhole open so that you could pass through it was a negative energy density stuff that weighed less than zero. And interestingly, there's a quantum vacuum effect. You were talking about the vacuum energy state that we've just discovered for the universe as a whole. There's a vacuum state that occurs between two parallel metal plates that's a negative energy density state. It's called the Casimir vacuum. It's actually been measured in the lab. And this is just what would be required to prop the wormhole open. So we have this interesting quantum effect that the vacuum, the empty space between two metal plates, actually weighs less than zero, and this can be used to prop the wormhole open.
Wow. Dr. Atchuler, mind-blowing.
Yes. I would add that the practical application of the Casimir effect is not obvious, because the effect gets larger as the plate separation gets smaller, and there's just no drawing constructed yet which shows how you'd make that into a practical piece of equipment to construct the matter for the size thing we're talking about.
What happens when you put something between the plates? What happens to that object?
I suppose it's penetrated by the condensing and evaporating sort of virtual matter, and the energy, which is part of this effect. I mean, the effect occurs because inside the cavity, only a certain number of wavelengths of light, radiation, matter are allowed by the plate separation. It forms a kind of resonant cavity like an organ pipe. And on the other hand, on the outside of the pair of plates, every wavelength is allowed, so the amount of pressure from the outside is larger than the amount from the inside. At least this is a sort of straightforward way of looking at it.
Is it theoretically possible to build a wormhole and drag it around in the universe where you'd like to have it?
Well, it doesn't seem like there's a violation of physics as we understand it to do that, but we have no practical path for doing it. And there's another issue which comes up in many of these ideas, which is the amount of energy you need to do it. And while no one can point to a particular way of doing it at all, and that makes the discussion a little bit vague, some calculations suggest the energy is much larger than the total energy consumption of Earth over eons. The total human energy consumption may, in fact, be on the scale of a star's output to make the thing either open or stay open if you're talking about a wormhole.
Yes, I would emphasize these are projects for only super civilization could attempt. The wormhole that Kip Thorne talked about weighed, a couple of 100 million solar masses, 100 millions of times the mass of the sun. So our interest in this is not so much taking out the patent on the time machine, but we're interested to know whether it's possible in principle to have time travel in the universe. Situation is that general relativity seems to allow it. We need to know really whether the laws of quantum gravity, how gravity behaves on microscopic scales, to know whether or not you could really achieve these solutions. And it's interesting to us because there might be a possibility, Li Xingli and I have talked about, there being a tiny time loop at the beginning of the universe that would allow the universe to be its own mother. And so these are situations that would occur at very high energy densities, maybe in the natural universe. So we're looking for clues as to how the universe works and maybe even how it began.
Safe to say these are not subjects for NSF federal funding yet. We're talking about time travel this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News with my guests J. Richard Gott and William Altshuler. And our phone lines are lighting up, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to David in Pine City, Minnesota. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, go ahead.
Hypothetically speaking, it sounds like the knowledge of what these gentlemen have accumulated can possibly and more than likely prove that time travel is evident and possible. And in the future, if this is discovered, and when it is, and they decide to come back to our present time, do you think that if they toy with any of our present anomalies, things that are going on in our history, they might mess up the future since they're coming back to the past? And in doing so, is maybe the crop circle issue something that they're just toying with? Maybe something that they're just putting out there to show that they can come back and do certain things. However, they don't want to get too far with this, so they sneak in at night, make crop circles, and then head back to their future.
Well, one of the things I mentioned was that the kind of time machines that we're talking about don't allow you to go back before you created the time machine. So if we build time machines in the future, in the far future sometime, they won't enable you to come back to the present day. But you alluded to what's called the grandmother paradox. If the time traveler goes back in time, could they kill their grandmother and cause a paradox? And scientists who deal with these kind of situations have to think about the grandmother paradox, and there are two solutions to it. One is that space-time, there's just one consistent four-dimensional space-time. There's one past, there's one future, there's no changing it. And so the time travelers don't change the past. They were always part of it. They were always part of that history. History happened only one way. There's a more radical view by David Deutsch, which says that there's a many-worlds theory of quantum mechanics that says there's many parallel worlds, a world where World War II never happened, for example. And so in that scenario, if the time traveler went back in time, they could change history and cause the universe to go on a parallel path, but the history that they participated in originally would still exist also in parallel.
There's also a very good science fiction short story by Robert Heinlein called All You Zombies, which was published quite some years ago, which tracks in a very entertaining way a person who's his own mother, his own father, his own daughter, her own self, and is very much involved with this sort of time loop issue.
That's a great story, and Li Jingli and I were seeing if the universe could pull off a trick like that itself.
Paul Davies writes in Scientific American about a paradox where a traveler visits the past and creates all kinds of problems for the future, where he actually writes, he finds out that somebody else has written about the future that he learned about, and you really have, couldn't you create paradoxes that are not solvable and that could be dangerous here that we haven't thought about?
Well, one of the interesting ones is the Gen paradox, and this is that suppose someone from the future learns of a certain scientific theory, takes it back into the past, and tells it to the author of that scientific theory, and then say, well, where did that information come from? So these are called Gen. They're world lines through space-time that are circular, they're allowed by the theory, but you have to consider them when you're considering the quantum mechanics of the situation. But the likelihood of having something complex occur, like a theory or a book or a large macroscopic object, is rather low.
I got to take a break. We'll come back and talk lots more about time travel. Stay with us. Listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note, join Neil Conan and his guests on Monday in this hour for a look at stay-at-home dads. We're talking today about the physical possibilities of traveling through time and space, forwards, backwards. My guests are J. Richard Gott, professor of astrophysics at Princeton and author of Time Travel in Einstein's Universe, The Physical Possibilities of Travel Through Time. William L. Schuller, professor of science at California Institute of the Arts and author of The Science of UFOs, What If They're Real? Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who want to call. Let's get in there and talk to Jim. Hi, Jim in Lockwood. Is it Lockford, California, Jim?
That's it, Lockford, California.
Lockford.
How are you, Ira?
Hi, how are you? Go ahead.
Very good. I just want to let you know I wouldn't miss your show for anything. I love science. I love the show on Fridays, and it's wonderful.
Where is Lockford?
Lockford is roughly between about 35 miles southeast of Sacramento, California, out in the country.
Uh-huh, great. Thanks for calling. Give us your question.
Yeah, well, listening to your guests, obviously they're mathematicians and theorists and whatnot. My question is this. What are the possibilities that there's actual funded research that's going on in some dark hallway or in some dark building somewhere around the country or anywhere in the world that these types of principles are being put into practice, and actually the theory that a machine or the fact that we're trying to accomplish things on a physical level, is it possibility there at all?
Professor Gott?
Well, the thing about the time machines is that they're sort of hard to hide because they weigh a lot. You could build yourself a time machine for going toward the future, a shell of matter, which would be equal to the mass of Jupiter, that you might use to go forward into the future at about five times the rate of normal. If you want to build a time machine to go to the past, we're talking about hundreds of millions of times the mass of the sun. So it's not something that you really can hide in your basement or in a secret lab. So
you haven't seen some of those basements, I can tell you.
What?
You haven't seen the size of some of those basements.
Well, some of them may be pretty large.
But a theoretician could think about this all the time, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You only need a blackboard for.
That's right.
Well, we know science fiction, popular science fiction programs and writing and books and so on and so forth and passages that are created. My curiosity was just whether or not there's actual funded research that's going on other than yourselves.
Willie Mauschuller?
Well, I think NASA has on occasion and may still be putting a small amount of money into speculative projects, which I believe included for a few years some work on what's called zero-point energy, or we might now say something to do with dark energy. And if you look at the literature, besides Kip Thorne, there are a number of other people who have worked on wormholes who hold regular positions in universities or one of the national science agencies of one sort or another. And in some cases, that may have been specifically project-funded. In others, it may have simply been what they've been doing with their research time as a sort of normal thing. So, you know, aside from things which are top secret, I suspect there are people in regular positions, some of which have project funding for things like this, but
Ira,
not too many.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen.
Good question, Jim. Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. In fact, isn't it true that subatomic particles go back and forth through time all the time?
Well, Richard Feynman pointed out how a positron, which is a positively charged particle, it weighs exactly the same as an electron, could be considered as an electron moving backward in time. And so in the vacuum, when you have a creation of a pair, an electron and a positron pair, and then they come back together again and they annihilate, you could interpret that as a little closed loop, a circular world line of that particle. So that concept has been useful in developing Feynman's theory of quantum electrodynamics.
Professor Alschuler, in your book, The Science of UFOs, and keeping in thought in our minds that the fact that if you're going to time travel with the theories of relativity we're talking about in quantum mechanics, you have to start now. Would that mean if UFOs were real, that the UFO people would have to have been starting now, and if they were traveling through time, and then go ahead in time?
I'm not sure that's true. If they have had time travel for 1,000 years, then presumably their clock started 1,000 years in their past, which presumably is somehow related to 1,000 years in our past. So. I don't think if you rule out time travel before the origin of time machines in any one particular place, if you can transport them somehow, you can't rule them out from a place that didn't invent them yet. And I suppose they could have appeared in the past as far as we're concerned.
Is there any test you could give a time traveler to see if he's telling the truth or not about traveling in time?
Not sure I know about that. I can think of a wormhole test. If you want someone to demonstrate a wormhole nicely inside our solar system, ask him to put one end of the hole somewhere near the surface of the Earth so we can see into it, and put the other end, say, above the atmosphere of Jupiter so you have a good view of Jupiter, and just watch the cloud patterns, which are very distinctive. If you see a set of cloud patterns, which the Hubble telescope then sees sometime between 25 and 50 minutes later, depending on how far Jupiter is from us at the particular moment, and you view a movie through the wormhole, which you can see on the Hubble with that time delay, then you've got a pretty convincing case that you're looking through a wormhole.
Professor Goddard?
Because that's the light travel time from Jupiter to the Earth.
So you'd be getting there instantaneously with the wormhole, and it would be that delay by the normal conventional light way. Professor Gott, any suggestions?
Well, the time traveler from the future could tell you about future events. He could tell you that there was going to be an earthquake on a certain day because he would have read about it in the history books and so forth. And so in the picture of the one self-consistent four-dimensional universe picture, then his predictions would turn out to be accurate.
Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can understand the concept of time travel. If I were able to go faster than you and time is slower and I get there before you do and I watch you come and then make this test, am I seeing really you or are I just seeing the light of you? I mean, could I interact with you or just observe you like a movie?
No, the time traveler could come back around, and you could shake hands with the time traveler. So the time traveler who'd circled a pair of moving cosmic strings, or who had jumped through a wormhole where the mouths of the wormhole had been desynchronized by a certain amount of time, he could come to you from the future, and you could shake hands with him.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go back to the phones. John in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, John.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I wondered if your guest could discuss the identical particle or the duplicate particle theory. I remember picking up something about it sometime back, two particles or twin particles in different parts of the universe that share the same attributes. You could use to move between one and the other. No matter how far they're separated, they have a connection across space. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Is he talking about intertwined particles, or what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, quantum entanglement.
Entanglement, that's the word. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And this has now been demonstrated in the laboratory. And the general notion is that, in a way which is extremely peculiar and not like you would think about in ordinary life, two, for certain subatomic particles or particles of light, photons, which originate in the same place and with a shared state of being, continue to be associated with each other in a way which is not really broken until either they're interfered with by some outside influence or the state of one is changed. This means that if you change the state of one, the other one changes its state to match instantaneously, no matter what the separation between them is. And when this was first realized, and this was actually suggested not so recently, it was thought for a while that there might be a way around the speed of light because of this instantaneous communication feature, but it turns out that's not really true. Though there may be a way to transmit matter at the speed of light using an effect like this. The speed of communication actually can't be faster than the speed of light, even using quantum entanglement.
In fact, we did a program on this a few weeks ago where I think they separated the two particles across the Thames or something. I think they separated them the distance of a river as they moved them out of the laboratory to see how far they could go.
Right.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. And we're going to see, should we go to the phones? Let's see. Let's go to Travis in Pinedale, Wyoming. Hi, Travis.
Hi. I want to go back to the question about space travel and time travel. You guys answered my question, but I'd also like to answer another question. Would it vary between planets if you were traveling between planets?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Explain a little bit better, Travis.
When you were talking about space travel, you know, you go up into space and you come back, you're, I think it was behind, you know,
mm-hmm.
what, a certain, if I, say I went to, I don't know, Mars, would that be more of
well,
an effect?
You know, when you, for example, if an astronaut went to the planet Mercury and they lived there for 30 years, Mercury is closer into the sun than the Earth. It's going around the sun faster than the Earth, so your clock would tick more slowly because of that effect. And also, it would tick more slowly because you're deeper in the gravitational well of the sun. So when you came back from your trip, you would be about 22 seconds younger than you would have been if you had stayed home. If you went to Mars and spent a similar amount of time, you would find out you'd come back older than you thought because Mars is going slower than the Earth and it's further away from the sun. But these are effects of this order. Hmm.
Talking about time travel this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And I stand corrected. It was the Danube, not the Thames. The Danube, where they pulled apart those particles that were entangled. How do you get them entangled to begin with?
You have to have them born in the same cavity, for example, inside a laser if you're using mm-hmm. photons or the same light source. And you have to arrange things so that the photons come out with the same state. One way of thinking about this that's been used experimentally, I think, is to arrange for them to be polarized the same way. I'm sure that listeners are familiar with polarizing sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
And that property of light waves is pretty easy to manipulate. If you put two photons out that have the same polarization, that were born at the same time and in the same place, then if you change the polarization state of one, you can instantaneously change the polarization state of the other,
mm-hmm.
even if they're separated by a huge distance.
Is there a difference between time and space in travel? I mean, you know, Einstein sort of weaved them all both together.
Well, Einstein showed that the universe was four-dimensional. You have three dimensions of space, the ordinary three dimensions of space, you know, left, right, up, down, front, back. And then there's time. And the difference between time is that it's a coordinate. In other words, if you want to specify an event, you have to give three coordinates in space. 35th Street, 5th Avenue, 58th floor, and then you got to tell the time, like New Year's Eve at 9:30. So there's four coordinates required to specify an event. But the time dimension has a minus sign associated with it, Einstein showed, and that makes all the difference. That makes it impossible to travel faster than the speed of light. It links the speed of light as the link that connects distances in space with intervals of time, and so forth.
Gentlemen, you've given us a lot to think about and go home and talk to our kids about. So thank you both for joining us. J. Richard Gott is professor of astrophysics at Princeton University, author of Time Travel in Einstein's Universe, The Physical Possibilities of Travel Through Time. William Altshuler is the professor of science at California Institute of the Arts and author of The Science of UFOs, What If They Are Real? Thank you both for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Tom Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinn. If you have questions or comments, write to us. Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, 36th floor, New York, New York, 10020. If you want more information about time travel or anything we talk about on Science Friday, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curricula for teaching kids in school, for teachers. Also, back editions of Science Friday on real audio and on Audible for you to take with you and listen to later. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.